Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Andrea Mack Barnett, and I represent the VA. And Your Honors, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for a rebuttal. In this case, the definition of collective bargaining is ambiguous, and the VA requests that the court grant Chevron deference to its interpretation of its own statute.
Why?
And reverse.
Why should we grant Chevron deference to VA's interpretation?
Your Honor, the district court made a mistake in interpreting collective bargaining as defined by Title V.
I don't understand that to be addressing my question. You're asking for Chevron deference.
Yes, Your Honor.
Chevron deference is normally afforded to an agency interpreting a statute entrusted to its administration.
Yes, Your Honor.
This statute is not entrusted to VA's administration, is it?
Absolutely it is, Your Honor.
The definition of collective bargaining?
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, in Nicholson, this circuit determined that the scope of collective bargaining under 7422 is a matter that the VA was entrusted
to. So it would be defined differently for VA purposes than for all other labor law purposes.
If you're asking me whether...
Collective bargaining is a term that runs throughout labor law, not just government labor law, but even throughout labor law. But
yes,
especially FLRA administered laws. So why should we afford Chevron deference to one agency of the multiple employers?
Your Honor, Title V does not necessarily apply to Title 38. And if you give me a moment,
I understand you say that, but I'm still at a loss as to why we should have a different definition of collective bargaining, a distinctive definition of collective bargaining for VA law, as opposed to a definition we could rely on that runs across.
We shouldn't, Your Honor, because the statute, Title 38, the language of the statute, does not refer or defer to Title V. The purpose behind and the language behind Title 38 specifically excludes professional conduct and competence as an area for collective bargaining.
Right.
And in Colorado Nurses, which
that
was
term
in
collective bargaining is not a term that comes out of nowhere. I mean, it's been around much longer than this particular statute, and there's nothing that I see that indicates that Congress meant to give it an ambiguous definition when it's been around for a long, long time.
It has been around for a long time, and the VA says that collective bargaining is a catch-all term that means everything that is commonly thought of for collective bargaining, the right for to bring a ULP or a grievance,
but
the right
there
for
mandatory. There is this statutory definition. What is there about the VA personal statute what is it about that statute that would lead us to believe that the definition of collective bargaining agreement from the larger statute doesn't apply there? Why is that?
Your Honor, if we actually look at the statute, which is 7422 right. Under 38, it's divided from A through D. And in the statute, Congress clearly gave collective bargaining rights to the medical staff.
I understand that.
I don't understand that to be addressed in our question. Excuse me, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Yeah. The question is, when in that statute, when they use the phrase collective bargaining, why shouldn't we be looking to the definitional term that's used elsewhere?
Because
what is there about the VA personnel statute that makes it different?
Well, there are two things. Again, under 7422, collective bargaining is not referred or defined by Title V. The statute does not define it by Title V.
Title V does define it. And what is it that takes this out of the Title V definition? Now, the performance of the mutual obligation of the representatives of an agency and the exclusive representative of the employees to meet at reasonable times, consult and bargain in good faith effort to reach agreement with respect to conditions of employment affecting such employees and to execute and so forth. There is a definition in the statutes. Congress had that definition in the statutes long before it passed the section you're dealing with today. There was no reason to define it. It had a definition. Everybody knew what collective bargaining was. So why does it become something different when you find it convenient for the VA to have it be something different?
In a sense, Your Honor, you're asking why these two statutes can't be read in pari materia.
Yeah.
The major difference is that both statutes have different goals and intent. Title
both
V
is covering an element of employee federal employee personnel. Both of them do.
Yes and no, Your Honor. Yes, Title 38 refers to the medical staff, professional medical staff, and there is a different standard for professional medical staff. Under Title 38,
that still doesn't, I don't think it gets to my question, my concern. When Congress, in the VA personnel statute, is talking about collective bargaining rights, why should we think that it means something different than what it does in Title V? Well, I understand there are different purposes of the statute. They're concerned about what happens with patient.
None of those things.
They're concerned about patient care with the VA personnel. So I understand all that, but they're using a phrase. They're using words that elsewhere they've defined. Why should we not understand that that's the meaning of those words in the VA personnel statute?
I think it's clear if you look at the context of how 7422 came into being. Prior to 7422, the medical staff had no collective bargaining rights. Colorado nurses indicated that title...
We read all these facts in the history set forth in the brief. We don't, or I don't at least, and apparently Judge Griffith at least agrees, we don't see the connection between those facts and any logical conclusion that collective bargaining means anything different than it does everywhere else in federal.
It means something different because it's not clear that Title V rights pass at all to the medical staff.
It's not necessary that they do.
Well,
both the statutes use the term collective bargaining.
Yes.
Title 38 says what the effect of parts of collective bargaining are or what the review parts of it are, and Title V deals with it in other contexts, but there's no reason why it has to be passing exactly the same rights in order for the word to mean the same thing. You're an attorney, and counsel at the other table is an attorney. You don't do exactly the same thing, but attorney means the same thing for both of you.
And that's why the court should be granting Chevron deference, because there is an ambiguity in the statute. There is a loophole and a gap that needs to be addressed by the VA. Congress gave the VA the right.
What's the gap? I mean, the personnel statute clearly limits the types of labor rights that VA personnel have. There's no question about that. That's what the exceptions are about. But when you're going back to the phrase collective bargaining, why don't we start from the same baseline? That when collective bargaining is referred to, is defined in Title V as it's applied to the, and then it's used again in the personnel statute. Why don't we start with the understanding that we were given by Congress in Title V? And from there, then you carve out the exceptions. You end up with a different bundle of rights, but the baseline understanding of collective bargaining, why isn't that the same?
Congress was not referring to Title V when it wrote Title 38, mm-hmm. Section 7422. And if we were to look at the legislative history,
but it's
Congress
using the same phrase, right? It's the phrase collective bargaining rights.
It does refer to collective bargaining, but Congress knew how to refer to Title V.
And they knew how to refer to collective bargaining. Nobody doubts that Congress knows how to do these things.
Yes.
And they did not specify any different definition in this one. They didn't suggest any different definition.
Your Honor.
The statute says what it says. It says collective bargaining.
Your Honor, certainly Congress suggested a different definition of collective bargaining. Congress.
How did they do that?
Your Honor.
Point me to it in the statute, please. Tell me which section suggests a different definition.
Your Honor, if we look at Section A of 7422, Congress refers to collective bargaining, but does not define it and does not refer to Title V.
Yes, they didn't think they needed to define it, doesn't it?
They, in fact, if you look at the legislative history to understand what...
No, I'm talking about the statute. They didn't enact the legislative history.
They did not, but they also did not define collective bargaining.
Now tell me the section of the statute where you say Congress was suggesting a different definition for collective bargaining.
They were suggesting a different definition because they didn't define it as...
Tell me the section of the statute. When they don't define it, that doesn't suggest a different definition. That suggests the normal definition, doesn't it?
Does it, or does it suggest that it's ambiguous?
So, yeah. I would... Read Congress... Most of the words in any bill are not defined. Virtually all of the words. Every now and then they pick out a word they want an unusual definition for or a new definition, they define it. They didn't do that this time. They stuck with the one they had.
They stuck with the one they had, but because it's not defined Obviously, the union has a different definition for it, as the VA does. So that by itself means that it's ambiguous. And if you look at the statutory scheme.
I didn't follow that. What by itself means it's ambiguous?
The fact that we're arguing about what the meaning of collective bargaining means.
So if you raise a question about something, it becomes ambiguous?
When the statute doesn't define it.
You can make every word in there ambiguous, that
way. When the statute doesn't define it, I would argue yes.
What statute are you looking at?
I'm looking at 7422A. It says, except as otherwise.
Do you have that in the statutory appendix to your brief?
Yes, Your Honor. In the statutory appendum is where the language of 7422 is laid out.
Right.
And I'm merely pointing out to the court.
Show me where the such collective bargaining, that's in B, collective bargaining in A. Now, the first word in A is except.
It's in A and
they don't define except either, do they?
I beg your pardon?
They don't define the word except. That's the first word in subsection A. There's no definition, right?
Yes, but I don't
right.
think we're arguing
so,
about
so
the
therefore,
meaning
should
itself.
We assume except is ambiguous because there's no definition?
I think that collective bargaining is a term that can commonly be understood as a catch-all phrase for union rights.
What's your authority for that?
The authority for the common understanding of what collective bargaining is? Well, if we were to look at Title V and the way collective bargaining is used throughout Title V,
well,
we understand it means...
Well, I read your definition a while ago out of Title V, and that's not it, is it?
That's true, Your Honor. But going back to the statutory scheme and what Congress was intending to do, it intended to give the medical professionals collective bargaining rights, but at the same time balance it with the authority and the obligation of the VA to set standards for its professional medical staff.
I want to understand VA's position here. VA's position is that this was improperly... What relief is it VA is seeking at ground zero in this case?
We're asking the court to grant Chevron deference to its interpretation.
No. That's how we get to the relief.
Reversal,
what do you ultimately want out of this case?
Reversal of the district court's.
And the district court did what?
The district court granted summary judgment in favor of the, at the time, the plaintiff.
They got what?
You want to stop the FLRA proceeding, right?
Exactly, Your Honor.
Okay.
Stop the investigation.
Yes, and the danger here is that Congress intended
the worst thing that happens to you is you have a hearing.
The worst thing that happens here, Your Honor, is the FLRA decides patient care. That's the danger here. The VA is equipped to understand
medical
issues.
Well, what I understand the underlying issue, and we're not deciding the merits. It's not are they deciding patient care, but was there an unfair labor practice, a retaliation against two nurses by a negative letter in the file? Is that right?
Your Honor, the issue arises out of the conduct and competence of nurses, whether the VA can require nurses to report incompetence. Two VA nurses failed to...
the issue in the underlying case. The underlying issue would be whether it was retaliation when the VA... But the
letter, well, the union
isn't that the underlying issue?
Absolutely not. The union describes this as retaliation. The VA recognizes this as an attack on its authority to decide and set standards of professional conduct and competence. There's an ethical duty and a requirement by the VA to report incompetence. That affects patient care of our veterans. That's a direct effect
on patient
care. And
that can still be the law after the hearing on the underlying grievance, can't it?
The FLRA would decide that.
The FLRA either says this is an attack on patient care and therefore we're not going to decide in favor of the union, or says it was not retaliation.
Well,
either way, there's no precedent against you.
Your Honor, Congress...
So the worst that happens to you only occurs if you lose at the FLRA, and that's reviewable in this court, on direct petition, right?
The worst case scenario is an entity other than the VA is deciding patient care, is deciding the standards of conduct and competence by the medical staff of the VA. And this is an issue that in the legislative history, Congress was afraid of. And if you give me a moment, I'd like to read.
We have given you all of your moments now. You're actually 4 minutes and 50 seconds over. So unless my colleagues have.
I do have one question. Since you referred us to 7422A, how do you read the last phrase, in accordance with Chapter 71 of Title V? Why doesn't that sweep in the definition of collective bargaining in 7103?
Thank you, Your Honor. The grammatical rule of the last antecedent, the reference to in accordance with Chapter 71 of Title V, refers to representatives chosen and not anything earlier. And that is the grammatical...
But the language itself says relating to labor management relations. That seems to broaden your interpretation of it, limited to just representatives chosen by them.
Relating to labor management relations is how representatives would be chosen.
Well, that's not all. I mean, labor management relations is much broader than how they're chosen.
Your Honor, but mere grammar indicates that
now,
that...
For the far as the last antecedent rule, you not only have the present parenthetical, but you've also got the missing comma. It's a little hard to say that, I mean, the last antecedent is not a hard, fast rule. That's a guide of interpretation, and where there's not an offsetting comma or conjunction, generally that last antecedent rule isn't applied, is it?
I believe it is applicable here, and I think it makes sense because collective bargaining needs to be balanced with Congress's obligating the VA to set the standards of professional conduct and competence of its medical staff.
I may have interrupted Judge Henderson. Did you have more? Okay. Thank you, counsel. We'll give you back 2 minutes if needed for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning, counsel.
From the discussion I just heard, I just think it might be worth agreeing with the court that the union is not asking you to rule on the substance of the ULP. All we're saying is this ULP should be processed normally by the FLRA.
But isn't it also apparent that Congress was trying to create a very different scheme of labor rights for VA personnel than existed for other federal employees because of the concern about patient care, right?
Well, I would say that the amendments of 1991, which were in reaction to Colorado Nursing, was definitely to set up a framework for collective bargaining on behalf of these medical professionals.
With much more limited scope of rights for
employees.
Well,
yes, three major exceptions were carved out very clearly, and that was to protect the VA's prerogative with vis-a-vis medical professionals.
And the statute gives to the VA the unreviewable authority to decide whether one of those exceptions applies, right?
Yes, it's unreviewable.
And so in doing so, isn't it giving to the VA authority to determine what is collective bargaining?
Not at all.
How can it do that? How can you define the exception without defining the rule?
Well, let me put it this way. No other agency of government can evaluate the VA's 7422B decisions, but this court can and is now doing it. And actually, that statute, when it was first...
Wait, and let's talk about what goes into the decision, the 7422B decision. What does the VA have to decide when they have an issue before?
Okay. What they should do is...
What does the statute tell them?
Well, the statute says that in cases where there's been an attempt by a union to collectively bargain a provision or bring a grievance under such a provision, if that provision involves patient care, professional conduct, peer review, or employee compensation, that is, of these medical professionals, then the secretary can issue a decision saying that that either collectively bargained provision or a grievance brought there under is void. And in local, as Judge Sentell did in the local 446 case, he so held because he decided it involved compensation of nurses. So that is the power given to the secretary, but it's delimited. Have I responded?
Thinking about it. Go ahead.
Okay.
I have to ask a similar question to the union as to what I asked the government. You're up here litigating over these two grievances that you've got to know have a pretty strong defense that they are within the exception if you get back over to FLRA. I mean, you can still lose this, you understand?
Oh, absolutely, we do understand that.
Now, are you really wanting us to adopt the precedent you're going to have to live with of this narrow, of this strict interpretation of collective bargaining according to the definition from Title V?
Yes, Your Honor.
You do understand we're making precedent here in this case that you might not be happy with in every case that comes along.
I understand that. And yeah. With that in mind, what I would suggest this court do to avoid us appearing here again.
Oh, you'll appear here again.
That's probably true. But what we think would be appropriate would be to deal with the question left unresolved by Judge Walton in footnote 8. Because we think, where he said that this court has not definitively said that medical professionals have what I'll call 7102-based rights under the labor statute. And I think it would be helpful.
Once we get into that, don't we then get into what the government's arguing, if we go that route, that the VA does have Chevron deference? Aren't you heading in that? This may be rocks on both sides of the channel. I'm never sure how to pronounce that sibyl or whatever that is, but aren't you in a dangerously narrow channel there if we're doing that?
Well, I don't think it's too narrow to take care of. Judge Walton's decision would have placed the processing of the ULPs, and we believe properly so, back in the hands of the FLRA. Mm-hmm. And if not under the language of 7422, but if for other reasons the VA can convince the authority that this somehow, let's say, would intrude into an area covered by a regulation.
I mean, it's not somehow. It looks pretty plain that what you're grieving about has to do with the decision the VA made based on professional standards.
Well,
professional duty, that the nurses have this duty to report failures of care.
Frankly, that's one of the misconceptions underlying this case. There absolutely is no obligation on the books at the VA.
That's for litigation in the merits phase. But that's for litigation in the merits phase, but at least the government's position, it looks pretty convincing, is that there is such an obligation.
Well,
we're not going to decide that.
No, but it's a curiosity that I finally pulled out for my own clarification, that in the Secretary's 7422 decision here, on page 516 of the appendix, this is the Secretary of the VA saying that there is no obligation on the part of nurses to personally report poor performance of other nurses to their supervisor or anybody else. And I'm reading on page 516. The policy does not require individual employees to report such information to their state licensing board.
Sorry to learn that.
Pardon me?
I'm certainly sorry to learn that.
Makes
me very concerned about the patients at the VA hospital.
What I'm saying is there is no, that the Secretary of the VA here himself says there's no written policy that obligates nurses to report on fellow nurses. Whether that's a good policy or not, I'm not speaking to.
I thought you were, I don't have it in front of me. Report to whom? The state licensing board?
Well, can I finish? I'll read just the one sentence. The policy does not require individual employees to report such information to their state licensing boards or to report any questionable behavior or questionable clinical practice.
Now, where is that on the page?
Right towards the top, Your Honor. At the third line, starting with the word the policy. And this is like the policy of reporting substandard care. or substandard behavior by a fellow nurse.
Does not require individual employees to report such behavior to their state licensed worker, to report any questionable behavior or questionable clinical practice by another nurse directly to their supervisor
or anyone
else in the facility.
Right. Does that seem strange? Truthfully, it does a little bit. But what it means is that in this situation, the VA cannot point to a regulation, a written regulation, saying that these nurses had to report the other nurses because they felt she was lazy.
Well, how about the next sentence? However, the Minnesota Board of Nursing reporting obligations do require individual nurses to report personal knowledge of any conduct by another nurse that might be evidence of incompetence, unprofessional and or unethical conduct, or evidence that another nurse is unable to practice safely.
If there's an obligation, Your Honor, in what you just read, it directly runs from the nurse to the Minnesota State Board of Licensing, not to their supervisor, by the very words on the page.
Right. But, I mean, there is some reporting.
There is a reporting.
At least, yes,
really
to the Minnesota State Board.
It doesn't really say in that sentence to whom they're to report it, does it? It says that's where the board is from whom the duty arises, but...
Well, what surprised me is this sentence very clearly saying that they don't have to report it to their own supervisors.
It says that policy doesn't require it. And then in the next sentence, it says that the Board of Nursing Obligations do require it.
Only to the state board.
It doesn't say that. However, the Minnesota Board of Nursing reporting obligations do require individual nurses to report personal knowledge of any conduct by another nurse that might be evidence of incompetence, unprofessional, et cetera. It doesn't say to whom they have to report it.
Well, sure. The prefatory words are, however, the Minnesota Board of Nursing reporting obligations.
Reporting obligations do require individual nurses to report. Now, I can well imagine that might require them to report it to a responsible person. Well, I haven't read the standards of the board, but...
Well, it then says, see footnote 4, and footnote 4 is the Minnesota statute saying, shall report to the board, personal knowledge.
Okay.
So we think that the FLRA is capable of responding to the... I mean, obviously the VA is going to put in a defense to the ULPs, and they very well might win their case on their defense, but all we're saying is let the FLRA process this ULP normally.
Okay. And in so doing, you're getting yourself stuck with a definition of collective bargaining you may not like down the road.
I'm not sure why you say that.
As over the years, I've been asserting this definition of collective bargaining.
Right.
Over the years, the people that have criticized me have been union lawyers.
No, I agree entirely with your definition.
I'm glad you agree with me, but I'm not sure that all of your colleagues are going to be very happy with what you win in this case if you get what you're looking for here.
No. Just to clarify things, I don't think anything I said about the kind of defense the VA might interpose if the FLRA means that there's a different definition of collective bargaining in 7422A.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Your time is up, and the government can have back 2 minutes for rebuttal if it wishes.
Thank you, Your Honors. Earlier, the VA was asked, what's the loophole? What's the danger here? And I wanted to take a moment to read to you what Congress thought the danger was here. And this is on page 7 of the VA's reply, where we quote the legislative history. It says, if VA were required to collectively bargain or externally resolve employee grievances in areas involving care of its patients, the necessary accountability for quality of care and patient safety would be lost, and veterans' health care could be jeopardized. Now, that's the danger here. The VA had an obligation to ensure that its nurses report incompetent care. In order for the VA to investigate whether nurses are in fact reporting incompetent medical care, it has to effectively investigate and ask questions. Two nurses filed grievances, which in effect could be an end run around the VA's ability to set the standard for professional care and conduct. We can't have the FLRA decide the standards for professional care, professional conduct, and competence of the medical staff. And I believe my time is almost out, but that's the specific danger here. And
I understand your time is a maximum. It's not a minimum. You don't have to use it all if you don't want to.
Thank you. Well, one more point then, Your Honor. The union suggests that this court should decide the murky issue of what Title V rights are passed on to the medical staff. Here, we believe that that's not necessary for the court to decide because Title 38, with a collective broad meaning of collective bargaining, gives the medical staff all the commonly thought of collective bargaining rights, union rights.
I do have one question, and that is, can you envision, and you may have answered this, and I didn't hear the answer, but can you envision at this hearing any way in order to rebut reprisal that you could avoid establishing that what these two nurses said, the other nurse, or her performance, was accurate? In other words, at this hearing, the two nurses are going to say, we were telling the truth, this nurse is a bad nurse, and this is just retaliation for our testimony.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody, I assume, is going to say, no, wait a minute.
Yeah,
I guess that's right. In other words, they are good nurses.
She can be a bad nurse, and either side can still win. The nurse that's not there.
Ultimately, we'll all lose if she's
they
a
honestly
nurse.
Reported she was testified she was a bad nurse, and she was a bad nurse.
It's okay. The duty to report the incompetence is right. The duty to report the incompetence is at stake. The VA needs the right and the means to investigate whether one of its nurses is in fact incompetent.
They should have said something about it sooner. Then their testimony is the government's position.
Yes, right? Your Honor.
Once again, aren't we litigating over some awfully small differences of opinion here?
The statute gives the VA the right to conduct, to establish the standards for professional conduct and competence.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Submitted. Call the next case.